Welcome to Cognitive Support, a podcast exploring various aspects of fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, including what it's like to live with it, what it's like to support someone with it, and how we can provide additional support to everyone. Cognitive Support is a production of Organ Behavior Consultation. I'm Nate Sheets. And in our third pilot podcast series, we're going to be talking about the actual process of proactive conversations in the cognitive support model. We have several videos of this on the YouTube channel, but people are asking me for more explanations of how to do the process in a more effective way, as well as practical ways that it can play out. So hopefully we can continue to do that throughout the podcast series if the podcast is something that you guys are into. And remember that we're doing these initial podcasts to get your feedback. So your feedback would be very appreciated as to whether or not this is even something interesting to listen to. So cognitive support is the term that I use that kind of describes the approach that we can take to decrease challenging behaviors for people with FASD or other developmental conditions, or really for anybody, any child or person that just needs some extra support. And in cognitive support, we have four major steps. We change the environment or change our approach as caregivers. Then we have a proactive conversation, and that's when we make a plan with the person that we're supporting. Then we practice that plan. And then the fourth step is to, if needed, adjust the plan or reinforce the plan. The first step, let's think about that. Changing the environment or changing our approach. The Organ Behavior Consultation page has a cognitive skills list that you can fill out for the person that you're supporting. We'll put a link to that on the podcast description for you. And so you know that you're doing cognitive support whenever you are changing your approach or putting a plan in place with a certain cognitive skill in mind. So in other words, you have an idea of why a behavior is happening. For instance, my kiddo struggles with transitions. And then the plan that you make will be specifically geared to bypass that cognitive skill difficulty. And we'll talk about what that looks like. That's a cognitive support. It's when you're using cognitive skills as the rationale for how you are responding or changing things. So talking about changing the environment, if you have a kiddo, for example, who's extremely distracted, a cognitive support would be to change the environment. You know, turn off televisions when having conversations, remove other people when they're trying to do homework, those kinds of things. And of course, those are the easiest things to do, the things that we don't even require the person that we're supporting to be a part of. We can change those things. Or changing our approach. And the big one for FASD, the approach that we need to change, is how often we are talking to the person. Because we have to remember that with almost all cases of FASD, the person is not able to process verbal communication very well. For many of them, this podcast would not necessarily be the best way to communicate with them. Unless, of course, they listen to it over and over again. That might be helpful. That would be a cognitive support, potentially. But what we have to really look at is how much are we speaking? How quickly are we talking? Are we giving them time to process? And of course, should we be visualizing what we're talking about? Should I be writing notes? Should we be using a to-do list? All of those things. Those would be approaches that we could change before even having to address the behavior with the person that we're supporting. Then maybe we've made some changes or the situation just calls for an immediate plan to make with the person. And you know, the most broad plan that you can probably make is what is something that we can do when we get upset and we're at home? So escalations at home, how do we respond? So this is when you have that proactive conversation with your kid or your client. You talk about what your concern is. You can follow a lot of the guidelines and the principles of collaborative problem solving here. But what you have to also do is maybe have this conversation over several different conversations. Or you have to split it into periods of time where things can be thought of. So the example that I frequently use is saying something like, hey, I want to talk to you about all the escalations that have been going on. You're not in trouble. I just want to have a conversation with you. And we're going to have that conversation when I get back from switching the laundry. Giving them time to process, but also letting them start to think about potential solutions. Another thing you can do is to visualize or have the conversation visually. So if you're working with a teenager, for example, who texts, maybe texting would be the best way to go here. But let's just say that you're sitting down to have a conversation. So you're going to sit down and you want to hear their solutions to the problem first. And we've talked about this on videos. Even if you do not think that their solution will work, if you have time, you want to try it. And for a conversation such as, you know, what should we do when we get escalated? You have time. You don't have to necessarily get it right the first time. As opposed to a conversation about, how are we going to safely go to the doctor's tomorrow, right? You don't have time to try out a bunch of different things because the appointment is tomorrow. So if they have ideas, go ahead and give them a try and then write the plan down or visualize it and then practice the plan. And practicing the plan is so important whenever it's possible because it allows the person to physically practice it and it allows you to physically practice what you should be doing, which when we're talking about escalation is you should not be talking. Talking is the worst thing you can do when really anybody's escalated, but especially somebody with the FASD cognitive skill challenges, such as receptive communication. Once you practice the plan and you have the opportunity to do the plan, you're going to come back and make any adjustments. And there's a lot of reasons why adjustments might need to be made, but the biggest reason is probably for the person who is supposed to follow the plan, the person with FASD, for example. They just don't think about it in the moment. So then we might come up with prompts for them. And we're not going to talk about prompts very much right now because that's a whole long topic for another podcast, but that's an adjustment that you might make, or you might just put the support in from the get-go. Or you might sit down and say, okay, we tried your idea. It didn't work. Why do you think it didn't work? And then give them time to think about that. That might be 30 seconds or it might be a couple hours where they really got to think about why is it that I didn't follow through on the plan, or why is it that the plan didn't work? And also, you don't want to necessarily change the plan the first time. That first instance of things not working out may not be enough for the person to fully grasp. So you might just try the plan again and let it fail a couple of times before any adjustment actually is made. Sometimes it just takes a while for somebody to learn a new way to do something. Once you get to a point where the person no longer has any ideas of their own, that is when you might start suggesting your ideas. And of course, your ideas are going to be much more zoomed into a specific cognitive skill that you think is contributing to the behavior, such as transitioning, emotional regulation, impulsivity, etc., etc. You're going to give those suggestions and you're going to want to make sure that you have their buy-in. And of course, you want to visualize this plan, practice it just like before, potentially put a prompt in place. And that's how you work on adjusting these plans. So one practical example of this might be the transition coming home from school. That's a big time of difficulty for many families that I work with. And what's going on there is a lot of different things. First of all, it's a big transition in of itself. They are leaving potentially a bus environment or their school environment and having to transition to a completely different environment. And for most of us, that doesn't even seem like a big deal, but transitioning is a series of cognitive skills. And so if you don't have those skills, it's not as easy as simply going from one place to another. Another issue will likely be that they are very tired mentally and potentially physically. If they've been holding it together all day in school, they may not have the ability to keep on doing that to the same extent while at home. And so what you really want to do is ask yourself, what our expectations are of them right when they get home. So this is the very first part of cognitive support when we're looking at ways we can change the environment or change our approach. That includes questioning what our expectations are. So if they get home and we're putting any kind of demand on them, that is probably not going to be helpful because they're too tired. So we want to give them time to replenish some of that executive functioning fuel and to have a nice, smooth, and long transition. I don't think you should be putting any kind of expectations on somebody for at least 45 minutes, at least. And in many of our clients' cases, any kind of homework would be too high of an expectation because that would just increase a lot of the emotional regulation issues and escalate the person. So we might even work with their IEP team not to have any kind of homework expectations. But then there are the family expectations. Sit down for dinner, turn the TV off, all of these things. So once we get that first transition going from school to home kind of worked out, we might see a decrease in behaviors throughout the rest of the night, or at the very least, we'll have a few more resources to then start making plans to address those behaviors. So transitioning home from school can be as simple as just giving more time. I would allow them to watch TV if they're TV watchers. I would allow them, in most cases, to play video games if they like video games. I would allow them to just sit around and do nothing. I would also advise people to not engage verbally unless they want to talk to you. If they're not going after your attention right then, just lay off for a little bit and let them kind of get ready and get adjusted for the new environment. Another example of cognitive support could be when somebody's waking up escalated. So some kids wake up escalated, and that can happen for a variety of reasons. A big reason is frequently active mental health symptoms or manifestations. So mood disorders frequently, I have seen result in kids waking up escalated. Some other more severe mental health issues, including schizoaffective disorders, schizophrenia, and others. Also, however, there could be a sensory issue going on. So if your kid has sensory issues and they're waking up escalated, there are some things that you might be able to do to provide cognitive support, including when you go in to wake them up, do a sensory activity that you know that they like right away and don't use any words if possible. A lot of kids just like really deep pressure, essentially getting a massage, because who doesn't like that? So if your kiddo is somebody who, if you were to sit there for 10 minutes and rub their back, that would calm them down. That might be what you do. Maybe there is some kind of back massager that they like, or they like their feet squeezed, or other sensory interventions that work throughout the day. We would want to see if it would be possible to do an intervention, a very relaxing intervention, first thing. That way we can prevent them from reacting to you and your words and your expectations, and maybe just sit there for 10 minutes with you in silence. And then the proactive plan that you make with them could be, you're going to go in, you're going to do 10 minutes of sensory, and then you're going to leave. And once you leave, that means they need to start getting up and getting around. And of course, that might take several plans to kind of get how that works out, figured out for you guys, but that would be the starting place. So again, in both of those suggestions, the cognitive support is more about us being proactive rather than trying to figure out how to respond once escalation occurs. That's the whole purpose of proactive plans. So we're already out of time. I hope that this was somewhat interesting and relevant to you. And again, we're asking that you send us feedback. The information will be in our outro to let us know if these podcasts were helpful to you and if you want to hear more. And if you think the videos are better, if you can tell us that, that's totally fine. Please be honest. Thank you for listening to the Cognitive Support Podcast. This episode is copyright 2016 Organ Behavior Consultation. If you haven't already, please like our page on Facebook at www.facebook.com/bethebrain and visit our website at www.organbehavior.com. There you can leave us your thoughts on this podcast and request future topics of discussion.